This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Stepan tipped it out at center. He's hit by Prince. Back behind the play. Stepan is down. No call. Nash to the net. Stopped by Tukarski.
The main focus is, you know, my head and it's the shoulder, and there's a lunge there. But like I said, we can pick it apart all we want, but at the end of the day, you know, we got bigger things on our plate.
Courtesy of our friends at TSN 690, the first one is the call of the Brandon Prust hit on Derek Stepan from John Bartlett. The second clip is Stepan talking about the hit himself. At the time, he obviously did not know he broke his jaw because he came back and he finished that game, game three.
It's the playoffs.
I know it's the playoffs. And, you know, would anybody be surprised if he plays today?
No. Not really.
I mean, it's you know,
be like Getzlaff, and then just punch him in the face.
Well, you'll just have
they
to.
Will.
Wear, he'll wear that big jaw shield that we've seen players. You know, it's sort of hard to play hockey with your mouth wired shut, your jaw wired shut. I imagine, but
it's playoffs. Right?
Exactly. It's playoffs. We don't blink twice about it. We've seen it. Your thoughts on the hit? Two games, is that enough for? Is that enough for Prust? Did you think that he deserved more? Did you think he deserved less?
Two games is like four games during the regular season. It's about maybe one or two short, probably. I like Brandon Prust, but the hit was dirty. The hit itself, like the physical, I thought it was shoulder to sternum there. So I didn't think it was a dirty hit.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a late hit, making it a dirty hit. Tom Giulitti, I saw, said, you know, the NHL's test is 0.6 of a second after the puck is let go. This was 0.9 of a second. So some people might be saying, oh, 0.3 of a second. That's a big deal in hockey. It happened so quickly. So I think it was dealt with accordingly. You know, it was dealt with properly, Drew. Obviously, they should have called the penalty during the game. That's what Vigneault was whining about. Sure, fine, whatever.
It happened literally right in front of the ref.
Right. But
couldn't have had a better angle at it.
Right. But at the end of the day, he gets a suspension, and you're trying to take that out of the game. Although I wish there were more middle-of-the-ice hits now. That wasn't necessarily middle-of-the-ice, but there aren't really big collisions anymore a lot of times in the middle of the ice. So I want to see that, but just I want it to be the right time. Yeah. That was late. I thought it was dealt with appropriately.
Yeah, two games. As you mentioned, Richie, that's kind of like four games in the playoffs. And, you know, I'm a big Prust fan. I've always been a big Prust fan. And it's kind of funny that Montreal Canadiens went out and got him from the Rangers.
Yes.
Where he was with for, was it 4 years in New York? And that happens at MSG, but it was a late hit. And Richie mentions, you know, if you can count, that's always the thing. It's always been like that. If you can count to one in between when the puck leaves a guy's stick, and then you can clearly count to one. It almost felt like it was like 2 seconds. It was late, and it wasn't a hit to the head, and it wasn't on purpose, but he definitely followed through on a hit when he knew the puck was long gone.
Yeah.
So it was a dirty hit in that sense. He got two games, and you know, you move on from there, and I think Stefan Quintel has done a good job replacing Brendan Shanahan, making these decisions. I wouldn't have had a problem with Carcillo getting 20 games, because, you know, I thought it was ridiculous that...
Well, he elbowed the ref.
I thought it was absolutely ridiculous that the linesman was being criticized for how he was handling Carcillo. I mean, Carcillo looked like a caged pit bull.
Who is criticizing the linesman?
Well, nobody, people.
the Twitterati.
Let's just say the Twitter.
Am I assuming it's the Twitterati?
Twitterati, exactly. Yeah, okay. The famous Twitterati.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you move on from these two incidents, but, you know, Richie mentioned that, you know, he kind of misses that open ice hit and that lack of that style of hit. At least we're seeing these teams get a little bit more engaged physically, you know, in this series, because first couple of games, we didn't see anything like this. And I love to see that, because, you know, we talked to Sean Fitzgerald couple segments ago. You know, regardless of the hate in the previous series, you got to have some hate. You got to have hate in the series, especially when, as Richie mentioned, your goalie was knocked out of the playoffs. You should be mad.
Well, that's my question, is sort of a two part. One, why wasn't the hate there immediately after Price goes out of the playoffs?
I think Don Cherry spoke about it. He said they only had so much hate right after that Boston series, they couldn't really get riled up.
And second question, does this, now that there's hate between these two teams, uh-huh, we assume there's hate at least, does that benefit the Habs, who seem to feast off of the energy more than the Rangers, who are always sort of at the sort of the calm, don't make waves, status quo sort of level?
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I think the Habs seem to play off of emotion a little bit more with Therrien and with Subban and some of their big guys. I think you're probably right about that, Drew. And the Rangers, McDonough is such a great defenseman, and we said before during the year, I mean, top five.
Should have been a Norris candidate.
Top five NHL defenseman. Yep. I mean, if he's top three there in the Norris candidates or not, the point is he's been such an effective player. And you've seen one thing that ought to be noted about this series as far as that the Rangers are outskating the Habs. The Habs outskated the Bruins, but the Rangers are outskating the Habs. They're just faster. And that's been a significant factor for this, for some of the Habs players who haven't been able to, as we said last segment, turn the corner, create space, because the Rangers are going with them step for step, so there isn't much space. And you wonder if the Habs don't bring in a little more of their defensemen in terms of off of the rush. I don't mean Subban taking the puck from behind the net, which he's better than anybody at doing, and coming up the ice with it. I mean, you know, coming in on a 3-on-2, 3-on-3, and the defenseman is the fourth guy, and he has to create the chance.
We saw Markov getting that first goal. Exactly. A bad goal, like we outlined at the beginning of the show, how, you know, Henrik Lundqvist doesn't let up that goal.
A beautiful pass by Pacioretty, cross ice, sees him off wing, Markov puts it on net. That's exactly what I'm talking about, Drew, to be able to create offense that way.
Yeah, and you know, Richie, you nailed it again. With this element of this game here, the speed element, that is, the Habs are having trouble with that. And P.K. Subban has struggled, and Josh Georges has struggled, even though, you know, he almost saved that goal there. But, you know, he's an excellent defenseman. What I'm saying is this team is fast. It caused the Penguins all types of problems. It cost the Flyers all types of problems. Talking about Chris Kreider and Matt Zuccarello and Benoit Pouliot and Carl Hagelin. And Rick Nash, they've got a lot of speed on the wings, and that's causing guys like P.K. Subban problems. He's an excellent skater, and it goes throughout the lineup, and Emelin is having problems. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of tiredness in the Habs, which, to be honest with you, shouldn't be the case, because they were the only team that had that weak layoff after sweeping the Lightning. So, I mean, these guys have to find an extra gear. I realize that, you know, beating the Bruins took a lot out of them, but you don't think the Rangers in those 2 7-game series took a lot out of them, and they had all those back-to-back games that have been well-documented. So the Habs, I think the Habs are going to win tonight, by the way. I'm going to go on.
Well, they won't play it tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, yeah. And I did predict the Game 3 win. Can check my Twitter on that.
You also predicted that you were going to order pizza, and you did that successfully.
Wow,
as well.
3 for 3.
Yep.
What's the third?
The pizza. Oh, well, I guess if they win tomorrow, it'll be 3 for 3.
Yeah. And I bet you 4 for 4, because he's probably going to order pizza again.
No, I got a side of wings with the pizza.
All righty. Why don't we go to break, and when we come back, we'll then talk about the Canucks hiring of Jim Benning. We were supposed to do that about an hour ago, but you know how things go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Further until the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or visit them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, the Vancouver Canucks sort of made official one of the worst-kept secrets in the hockey world, that being the hiring of Jim Benning to be their new general manager. Benning obviously met with the media yesterday. Here is Jim Benning on his vision for the team.
I like our core players. Our core players, I feel, are high-character people. And so I'm happy with that part of it. You know, we need to get back to what we're good at. And this organization needs to play an up-tempo, fast, skating, skilled game. Like up going into up before last season, this team had it was almost an attitude about them that, you know, a relentless attitude that they were going to skate and to wear teams down and to score. And for whatever reason, that didn't happen last year. But I'm hoping that, you know, with Trevor, we hire the right coach for this group, and we can recapture that going forward.
makes some, you know, I like his ending part, hire the right coach, when, because he talks about last year how they didn't have the same attitude. It's because they hired the wrong coach.
To fall asleep listening to that.
Well, yeah, he's not the most, he's not going to be, running any presidential campaigns or participating in politics. Hey, one of the things about a lot of what he said there is most of it's untrue, I think.
But a necessary lie?
Yeah, I think it's a necessary lie. Don't get me wrong. I think Jim Benning's a good hire. I think from what I know about him, I don't know a ton about him. I've just read a lot about him. But you know, he's very qualified. He's gone through the building of organizations. I think coming from Boston is certainly going to be helpful. And I think his understated manner is going to be probably a welcome change for the Canucks as an organization, not so much the media, because I think the media is going to have a lot less to work with in the coming years. But when you look at what he says about the team, I think our group is a strong, high-character group. I don't know if he believes that, Drew. I think when he says they have to get back to playing a certain style, sure, I think every team wants to play that style. Certainly, that's not true. I think that's an obvious statement. I think when he says, you know, in terms of the changing the organization, and the head coach is the obvious one, right? And he wants to hire the right head coach, as you mentioned, and we know that's obvious. But the attitude issue, that was the one thing I don't agree with him on, that they had an attitude. I think that attitude helped them and hurt them. It helped them, I think, sometimes in the way they played. I think it hurt them in the fact that they were arrogant to a fault, if there ever is not arrogant to a fault, but arrogant to a level that motivated the other team.
Sure.
And teams hated them. I think that's one of the reasons why Boston was able to come back in that series, was how motivated they were to beat a team that was just so arrogant about everything. And I think Benning, being part of Boston, probably felt that same way. So I don't think he believes a lot of what he said, but I do agree with you, Drew, that they're necessary lies. And he's going to change a lot of this organization. And if you see the way the team, you know, the Sedins are locked in there now. So it's not an easy job that he has. What's going to happen with Kessler? And Trevor Linden said he had a good meeting with Ryan Kessler. I don't know what that means. But if Kessler wants out and is going to be limiting which teams he's going to based on, you know, personal animus with certain players and other things, well, I mean, that's going to be a difficult task. You know, do you rebuild the defense? What do you do with the goaltending? This is not the easiest job. And then you have all the no trade clauses. So he's saying certain things. I think he's going to be doing a lot different things, though.
Right, and you talk about the player personnel, and the coach is huge in the sense, Richie, that you followed up Alain Vigneault with John, what's his name? Tortorella. is that his name?
I just forget his name. I like that,
just, just being a little tongue-in-cheek there. But no,
you're actually eating some tongue in your cheek right now.
you had that disastrous season there with John Tortorella.
That was a mess.
And now you have to bring, we were speculating about this, you know, off air, you know, is Barry Trotz in play here for Vancouver? And, you know, someone like that, I think, could have a really positive influence on this team. And there's others that have been mentioned, you know, John Stevens or others. And, you know, this team needs to have a bounce back year, because we've talked about this for probably, 3 years now on the show. The window for them to win, if it hasn't closed already, would argue it's closed.
Look at that roster. There's not enough talent on that roster.
Well, there are holes on that roster that didn't exist previously, and the goaltending position with Eddie Lack there, and you know you have a goaltending situation that's not desirable. With the trade that happened, and you have to figure that out. And then you have, as Richie mentioned, the big issue here is how is the team going to be constructed moving forward? Are you still going to basically build your... They've been building around the Sedins and Kessler now for quite some time. You could argue probably 5 years now. Mm-hmm. Everything is really... You know, you had Henrik Sedin and Ryan Kessler up the middle. You heard, you know, Alex Burrows, you know, they were going to move him out. And, you know, you have a core there that I think that Jim Benning's probably looking at that, and he's saying, okay, I might have to move significant pieces of this core. I don't think you're going to see the Sedins moved. I think Kessler will get traded, and I think you'll see possibly other guys get moved out there. And you probably will see, you know, younger guys come in. You have guys like Bo Horvat, who was traded. The draft pick was traded from New Jersey. Bo Horvat, Hunter Shinkarak. Are these guys going to be given an opportunity? Are you going to start anew? I think you're going to see significant moves coming out of Vancouver. I think I wouldn't say they're going to blow the team up, because I think if you look at in goal and on defense, they're pretty set there. You're not going to see crazy moves.
Well, you know,
but I think on forward, you got some question marks there.
Look at their forward group, and besides, you know, the Sedins and Kessler, I mean, there's nobody else there that's overwhelmingly desirable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this isn't a team. You know, you look, you know, who's dying to get Yannick Hansen? Who's dying?
Well, Yannick Hansen, he's a guy that trains in Winnipeg in the offseason. He's a third line guy.
Yeah, he's
that,
right.
But I mean, Yannick Hansen's not a guy. I mean, he's a depth guy that they'll keep. It's not. It's Drew. To your point, it's the guys like David Booth and Alexander Burrows that have Zach Cassian. These guys are not good enough to be in top six forwards.
Yeah.
And that's that. You have to address that. You need to get better on the wings. And if you're going to trade Kessler, who's going to play second line center for you?
Are you filling a hole and then creating a hole in the same move? That's a question that has to be asked. Alex Edler's regression last year,
yep,
is a significant factor here. He's on the books for another 5 years, at $5 million per cap.
That's either Richie, last year their best defenseman was probably Jason Garrison and maybe Chris Tanev.
Yeah, Chris Tanev is the guy they have to sign, and I think that's one guy that they will take care of, because as you mentioned, he was a sturdy, a sturdy player during a year where there was just a lot of unrest, and I thought that just his game, getting the puck out, you know, being sound positionally was a helpful aspect. But a lot of the defensemen that they have, you know, Garrison is more of an offensive player than a defensive player. You know, Dan Hamm has got 2 years left. I think he's a marketable player, and I think he might be a guy they look to move for a younger piece, because he would fit, you know, he'd fit really well in Winnipeg's back end.
Sure.
Left side for 2 more years, $4.5 million. You know, a reliable guy. He can skate pretty well, can move the puck pretty well, but he's not, you know, he's not your top pair lock. He's a top four guy, but I don't think you really want him in your top pair unless you're playing him with a big-time right side D. So, I mean, that's an aspect there I think is he can fit into a dressing room pretty well. It seems pretty, you know, matter of fact, and all those things. So I think, you know, a guy like Hamm, who's somebody they look to move, maybe they look to move Kessler. If you're going to move those guys, then you got to look to move more guys. The problem is they signed Sedins for another 4 years each at $7 million per. So there you go. I mean, that's $28 million. That's $56 million that you got locked into these two guys. And are you going to rebuild on the fly? If you rebuild on the fly, and Benning's strength is scouting and drafting, well, by the time those players come through the system, the Sedins will either be ineffective, which they were last year, or at the end of their contracts anyways. So it's one of those you talk about the window, and I think it's a fair point. This is a tough job, guys. I mean, he knows he's going in for the long haul. I think the Canucks fans probably understand that as well, but the window is pretty close, and even if they have a really good year, I mean, you think they're going to go through LA, Anaheim, Chicago, and Boston, or whatever team makes the finals this year? I mean, that's a too tough of a task to ask. As you mentioned, Ez, they don't have the wing depth.
Yep.
And they don't have a goalie right now.
They're not good enough. I mean,
maybe Lack turns out to be the number one guy, but we don't know.
I would take the Jets roster over their roster.
Yes, absolutely.
I think one thing worth noting here, Jim Jamieson of the Vancouver Providence wrote about this 9 things to know about Benning, and I think he nailed it here. Jim Benning, Richie, working with Peter Chiarelli,
mm-hmm.
He's not afraid. They weren't afraid to make big moves.
That's true.
Like the Phil Kessel move and the Tyler Seguin trade. We all know that worked out in Dallas's favor, although Riley Smith and Erickson, you know, had varying degrees of success. I really like Smith, but, you know, he's someone that I think he has no hesitation making a big move.
But you do Richie, it with the depth on the roster first.
Yeah, and you're right. And they don't have the depth, but I think that they're probably going to have to move a player. And, you know, Hamhuis might be the guy. It might be Kessler. I think Kessler will be traded. I think you're going...
What about both?
And it could be both.
Oh, I mean...
You got to make a significant move there, because even though, you know, Horvath and Carrick, and you got a few prospects, they're a few years away from making an impact in the NHL. So you're going to have to make a personnel move there.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why they shouldn't talk to everybody, up to and including the Sedins. Maybe the Sedins don't want to finish their careers playing for a team that's not going to be anywhere near Stanley Cup contenders. Now, it's not going to be easy to package both those guys up, given their salaries and everything else, and the fact they have no movement clauses. But, you know what, is it worth saying, you know, is it worth the question?
That hard. I mean, there's certainly teams that would want a number one, a number one center, number one left winger. I mean, you have to hope last year, if you're that team, or evaluate it and determine that there are still number one center, number one left winger, and say, okay, I mean, what about Florida? Would you not say, oh, okay, well, That makes it changes our the complexion of our squad. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but that's a lot of teams would love to have those two players.
It certainly isn't a rebuild on the fly like you see other teams doing. This to me is a complete teardown that's necessary in Vancouver.
Well, I mean, if you look at Anaheim, when they a couple of years ago when they were down, they kept Getzlaff and Perry. So if you want to use that analogy, they kept Getzlaff and Perry. So here Vancouver has the Sedins.
Built the team around those guys.
They built the team still around those guys. Yep. They kind of loaded their system with younger players. They made a couple of trades. It's possible to rebuild on the fly. The difference there is that they've kind of rebuilt on the fly, and Getzlaff and Perry are in their late 20s.
That's right.
And the Sedins are in their 30s.
Mid-30s, yeah.
Who's the right coach for this team?
Well, that's a tough question, Drew. I don't know the answer to that right now. I haven't heard the names that are being considered. I don't even know the way Jim Benning wants the team to play. So it's hard. He says four lines. Well, every team, not every team, but four lines is certainly something that Tortorella didn't do. So it doesn't mean every coach will play four lines, but that is the trend is to play four lines. Now, the argument is that to play four lines, you have to have four lines of players. But I don't know who the right player coaches for this team, because frankly I don't know where he wants to take this team. If he wants to make a few moves and rebuild, you probably want a different coach than if you want to do this on the fly,
right?
Not even on the fly. You want to try and make the playoffs next year.
Sure.
So it's going to be dependent on how Benning wants to run the squad over the next few years. So I would lean towards him wanting to make trades and rebuild, and therefore a guy who's coached younger players before. A guy like John Stevens has a good relationship with some younger players. But I don't know what Benning has. What about the Boston system? What about his past relationships in Buffalo and Anaheim? Who knows?
It's something that we will have to wait and see how it plays out in Vancouver over this offseason. But it certainly will be an interesting place to keep an eye on. Let's go to break. When we come back, we unveil our UFA of the week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290, online at TSN1290.ca.
It's a fitting song.
It is. And we'll get to that momentarily. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Joe Zimmerman is in town. Tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com. And, of course, you do never know who's going to show up at Rumors.
Hold on. What about Jake the Snake?
That's what I was going to say. Last night, just out of the blue, Jake the Snake Roberts makes an appearance at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Was Damien there?
I don't know if Damien was with him. I'm not 100% sure. But Ezzy tried to make arrangements for me to get DDT'd by Jake the Snake Roberts.
Well, whoever, I don't know. I'm not sure who runs the Rumors Twitter account.
My guess it was Tyler.
Yeah, if it's Tyler running the Rumors.
If it's anybody else there, I don't think they know who I am. So yeah. I'm not sure why I would be DDT'd, why they'd be advocating.
He said
for
we can arrange that. Well, so tonight we could go there and we can arrange a little DDT from Jake the Snake on Drew on the stage
night.
Of Rumors.
He was there last night. So yeah. If he DDT's me today, it'll be like just somewhere random. Randomly on the street, he comes up and DDT.
Well, if you're a fan of wrestling and you remember, the old wrestling, he had two different snakes. There was Damien.
Oh, God.
There was a white snake, a python. I think they were both pythons, but he had a white and orange snake, and then there was like the green and black snake.
Damien Jr.
Yeah. So I actually preferred the white snake. It was a little bit.
Do you remember why they had to bring up the second snake?
Yeah, because I think the other one... Well, at one point, Rick White the Model snake. Martel sprayed his perfume.
God.
You remember Rick the Model Martel, and he always came out with that perfume? Mm-hmm. And he'd spray it into the guys' faces?
If I recall correctly, his perfume was called Arrogance.
Yes, that is true. And I think he sprayed... he killed one of the snakes with his Arrogance.
Oh, I thought it was Earthquake who squashed one of the
snakes. Oh, that's right. Earthquake sat on Damien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tragic. Tragic moment.
Yeah, and then that's why the second snake was... then brought out.
Yes. UFA of the week, Alex Hemsky. You might have thought that he finished his year with the Edmonton Oilers. You'd be wrong, but he was traded to the Ottawa Senators at the trade deadline. But prior to that, he had spent the majority, all of his career rather, in the NHL with the Oilers. Just coming off of a two-year, $10 million contract, He is a UFA as of July 1st.
Is he going to give any of that money back?
Well, I mean, you know, as you, one thing about Al Shamsky, I'm going to defend Al Shamsky. I know you don't love Al Shamsky. That environment in Edmonton is just like poison. Like, look how much better he played as soon as he got out of there. That was hell for him. And he played with Spezza, granted, and Spezza's a great playmaking center who Ottawa, for whatever reason, wants to get rid of. I don't particularly understand that. But he played with him and Mihalik for the most part in Ottawa, and I thought he was very effective.
17 points in 20 games in Ottawa.
Very effective.
26 points in 55 games in Edmonton.
You know, in Edmonton, they're moving the, they don't know what they're doing there. I mean, they haven't for a while, at least. We'll see what happens with McTavish. But Al Shamsky is a guy who can play in your top six. Now, can he stay healthy? That's an issue, obviously. But he can play in your top six. And there's a lot of teams who need a right winger who can create, like, a lot wingers who are really good playmaking playmakers aren't you don't find them everywhere. You know, they're difficult to get a hold of, and he's a guy who can hold on to the puck. He sees the ice very well. He holds on to it too long, obviously, sometimes, and doesn't shoot enough. We know that, and isn't the toughest player and all those things. But he can skate with, he can stick handle very well, and he can create offense. And there's going to be a lot of teams who can make room in their top six for a guy like Al Shamsky. Especially if you have a kind of a scoring center, a guy who needs the puck, you know, he's going to be a little more of a shooter. He's a great complement to a player like that. But at the same time, he played with a beautiful passer like Jason Spezza and played quite well as well. So I think he can be an effective player. Now, I don't want to sign him to a 4-year deal. You know, you look at his age, you look at his durability issues, and I think you want to stay away from that. But you know, he's 30 years old, granted, but, you know, he's a little bit fragile. I think he'll net himself a 3-year contract, probably on the open market, probably at about $4 million a year, probably.
So maybe a little bit of a price drop from what his AAV had been prior to this last contract with
the Oilers. Well, it was 5. It was 4.1 before that, but it was 5 on this last deal. But I think he gets a 3-year, $12 million approximate deal.
Good fits for him. Is Ottawa, staying in Ottawa, a good fit if they keep Spezza?
Yeah, I mean, even if they don't keep Spezza, it's probably a good fit, but I think he played well with Spezza. Maybe him and Spezza go somewhere together. I don't know. I mean, that's something to take into account. But as there are a lot of teams that can use playmaking right wingers. Now, everybody always looks at the Jets here. The Jets actually have some playmaking right wingers, because if Byfuglien stays, plays on the left side, he can be that guy. Wheeler is certainly that guy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's two guys there that can do that. And I don't think this is necessarily a fit. The Jets have holes elsewhere. But other teams that can use a guy like that, for sure. You know, what does Nashville want to do? Does Nashville want to play up tempo under Peter Laviolette? Well, then he'd be a good guy to play up tempo with and create offense. There's countless teams, I think, that could use a guy like this.
Yeah, and he'll get a contract, as you mentioned, Richie, 2 to 3 years. Maybe even someone gets crazy and gives him 4 years, because of the fact that he is an uberly talented offensive player. And I know he might not be my favorite. For me, I have issues with sometimes the way he competes, and I don't think I've ever seen him lay a body check. He's not a physical player, but he is.
But you know that he's not.
Right,
I know. You know that's not his game.
He's not my type of hockey player, but as Richie mentioned, he is a great offensive player. And he was a point per game after, Richie mentioned, playing with Spezza in Ottawa. And he's a guy that earlier on in his career, he was more of a shooter, and he's become more of a playmaker as his game has evolved. But, you know, you mentioned Nashville. I mean, Anaheim, you know, with Solani leaving.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Maybe he's a fit.
That's a good fit. Second line.
Yeah. You know, for the most part, he's played in the Western Conference. But I think there are a lot of teams that could use him. Probably not as a first liner, probably a second liner. But he has the ability to keep up and play on teams' first lines. He's a great player. You can't take anything away from his offensive ability. He has the ability still, I think, to put up probably 60 points in the NHL.
I agree.
Richie mentioned he's, unfortunately, you know, I think it was 4 years ago or 5 years ago, maybe he almost missed the whole season with Edmonton, and he's had durability issues. But yeah, he'll get a contract, and he's someone that, you know, even though the Jets probably wouldn't be in on Al Shamsky, I think, you know, a player like him would add an offensive element, second line right wing, if they decide to go with Dustin Byfuglien as the third line right wing. So, yeah, I think even though, again, like I said, he's probably not my prototypical player that I like on my team, I think that with your team that wants to add an offensive element, especially a veteran, and I think Nashville, Richie, is a good option. You know, they brought in certain players last year that unfortunately just haven't worked out. You know, Matt Cullen and Eric Nystrom have done a nice job, but they need a guy to really lead their offense. And for a team like Nashville, that could be Alex Hemsky.
He'll be 31 at the start of next season. Obviously, like you said, Richard, injuries have been an issue in his career. Last year, missed 7 games, so not terrible. The year before, the lockout shortened year, he missed...
What was it? It was 09 or 10, I think. Yeah.
It was 09.
He missed almost the whole season.
10, he missed 60 games.
That's right. So that's the biggest one. But, even the year after that, he did miss 35 games. Yeah. So, he certainly hasn't been the most durable player. How concerned, would you be about that?
Well, that's why you give him a 3-year deal, not a 4-year deal, or maybe a 2-year deal. But I think the market, what happens in this market under the cap system is you give him an extra year to get the deal done. So I think you're doing 2-year deals for most teams. Somebody goes 3 years to get him. That's what I think happens. And I think you're okay, Drew. He's not 37.
Yeah,
I think his skills should be able to. I don't think his skills will be an issue in terms of over the next couple of years. He's not just a shooter whom you might lose a little bit of speed like a Heatley or somebody like that and can't get into the holes. He can still skate well, and he's a passer.
Along those lines, what's his best attribute?
His vision. I mean, he sees the ice extremely well. He's a very good passer. He's very good, and he can pass it. And he can pass down on the rush. He holds the puck again a little too long at times, but you still have to hold the puck. And Blake Wheeler had that issue. He's really done a nice job. And I know Hemsky is older than Wheeler, but he's a guy. I'd rather have the puck than not have the puck. So I put it that way.
Well, and what happened in Edmonton is that he was pushed to the third line. And
that's
it affected his game.
That's exactly
you had,
right.
You know, the influx of youth there with Taylor Hall and Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and Sam Gagné, and he was pushed out. And then, you brought in David Perron and his game struggled. And especially on that team, you can't have Alex Hemsky playing a checking role.
That's right.
Or a secondary scoring role. He's got to be, in games. He's got to be playing 16 to 20 minutes a game. Yeah, he's a great skater, and he's got great offensive talent. He's not a very good defensive forward. As I mentioned, there's zero physical element to his game, but he's a guy that you'll put out there on your first power play probably, depending on what team you are. And as Richie mentioned, he's a great distributor of the puck, and that's why he'll get scooped up. He might not be the most coveted free agent, but we heard rumors that LA was interested in him, and then they went for Gabrick. So I think that he's still highly coveted and by a lot of NHL teams. And as I said, if he's healthy, he's still a guy that can get 20 goals, 60 points, something like that.
You mentioned his lack of physicality, but you know what you're getting with him. You know that he's never going to be that guy, so you would never expect that from him. So I guess he is a little one-dimensional in the sense that if he's not scoring or not not creating, then he sort of doesn't really pull his weight. But you have to figure that he's going to continue along that path.
Well, a team like Colorado has some holes on the depth lines, obviously third, fourth lines. What are they going to do with O'Reilly? They obviously want to improve their back end, but a guy in that kind of a system could flourish. Hemsky could flourish in a system like that.
An up-tempo, freewheeling style system like they're playing there where the puck's always going forward and out of your zone quickly.
And it looks like Carolina's cutting costs, and I don't know what's going on there, but they're going to try and go on the cheap, and they may make some trades this offseason to go on the cheap. But, a guy like Hemsky would fit there with a guy like Staal because he's more of a shooter in terms of your score, although he can pass as well. You look at Florida, again, a team that needs, they need a fair amount. What about a team like Pittsburgh, Drew? What about a team like that who, Malkin and Crosby like the pucks on their sticks, but what about another guy creating a little bit of offense? Because what they have on their wings is, Kunitz on the left and James Neal, who reportedly has demanded a trade.
Yeah, he then went out and denied it, of course, but, who knows?
Yeah, so if he gets dealt...
Why would he demand a trade?
Well, Drew, I think those are complicated questions. I think when you look at a guy like James Neal, there's probably more going on in Pittsburgh than meets the eye.
Probably,
so
but they've cleared house for the most part, except Bilesma.
Maybe, I think that's going to eventually happen anyways. Maybe he just wants a fresh start. But the point is, you look at what he does. He's a shooter. He roams around. He gets the puck on a stick. He shoots. Kunitz is a guy who goes to the net. He's obviously worked well. Dupuis is a guy who succeeded on Crosby's wing. But overall, would another playmaker on that squad be an effective guy? A guy who can play a lot in the offensive zone? We talk about not having to defend as much. He works a lot of places. When you can make plays, a lot of teams would like your services.
Yep.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the goaltending news from around the NHL. Before we do that, quickly, though, Derek Brassard got off the ice with the Rangers and told the assembled media he's back in the lineup. So Derek Brassard returns to the Rangers lineup tomorrow in Game 4 between the Habs and the Rangers, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. John Bartlett from TSN Montreal with the call starting at 6 p.m. Central Time tomorrow. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
As we talk about Timbits as we come back from break here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Last week we had too many Timbits. This week we don't have enough.
Well, Drew made a selfish bagel purchase this morning.
I buy a bagel every week. You guys just, why is it self? Forget it. This segment is brought to you by CompuStitch Embroidery Design, the official sponsor of the Illegal Curve Overtime Pool. CompuStitch Embroidery Design has been serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996. For more information, visit CompuStitch.net.
If you keep that attitude up, Drew, we're going to have you in stitches soon.
You used that joke already.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I think you've used it before. Not
pretty
today.
Sure, pretty sure I haven't.
No, I thought you... that isn't the first time you've mentioned that comment, I don't think.
You know that I have stitches in my forehead?
So do I.
From running into a fireplace when I was two.
That explains a lot.
frontal lobe damage really would go a long way to explaining a lot about
my
you.
My dad, God bless my dad, John Ginsburg, he was chasing me in the house I grew up in. And
he was chasing you out the front door to try and get rid of you.
I slipped, and you can kind of see them. I don't know if you can see them. I mean, it's tough to see, you know, but right now. And I slipped and split my forehead, and he had to drive me to the hospital.
Hell of a story right here.
And, I've got stitches in here. Do stitches go away eventually?
Yes, they dissolve.
They dissolve?
Yes.
Or they just take them out.
Or they take them out. there's both 30
years ago.
Available.
Yeah, I guess, that's a good point. Yeah. Stitches were probably
I'm pretty sure they may have left a scalpel in your head, though. That would make sense.
When I was younger, my dad always used to say I was sucked out of my mom's womb with a vacuum because I had such a big head.
Dear God.
Anyways, that's another story. But, Drew, you know, more importantly, Richie, I think... Richie's losing it here. I think more importantly, we should be talking about Drew going to Lady Gaga. Yeah, like, forget about the playoffs. Drew went to Lady Gaga two nights ago. What's up with that, man?
I can't follow up on your vacuum story just there, I don't think.
Well, Lady Gaga, Drew, I have to say, actually, she's pretty talented.
She was quite talented.
I don't get it. I think she sucks.
She's called some people on stage, I was told.
Yeah, she
I've listened to her before. Like, she's supposed to be kind of like Madonna or like a pop superstar. I think her songs are awful.
Ooh,
really? You've never had this bold of an opinion on the show in a while.
No, but I'm a big pop star. Like, I like Rihanna. I like what Beyonce throws out. But like Lady Gaga, I think she's kind of lame.
You know, I'm not the world's greatest Lady Gaga fan.
We need to cut that clip.
But, you know, she's very talented. I knew some of the songs. I didn't know all of the songs because she played a lot off her new album, which I'm not as familiar with. But it was a great spectacle. And, you know, at least you can see that she actually can sing. Whereas a lot
can
of
she?
These other... Oh, yeah, she can sing.
I like Katy Perry better than Lady Gaga. Like that song
she can actually
with,
sing, too.
That song with Juicy J. But, you know, what's it called? We'll look it up.
When
I don't
is Virgin 103 stealing you from us and hiring you for the to add to the morning show?
And Lady Gaga always has that weird stuff in her hair, and she's always doing... her costumes are odd, and...
Your costumes are odd, too.
I'm not... let's just say that I'm not Goo Goo Gaga over Gaga.
Okay, let's talk about goalies.
Oh, God. Goaltender news from around the NHL earlier this week. We start in Long Island, where the Islanders... signed Yaroslav Halak to a four-year, I guess it's not technically a contract extension. They acquired his rights. He was scheduled to be a UFA at the end of the, on July 1st, but they acquired his rights from the Capitals, and then they signed him to a four-year, $18 million contract.
That would technically be a contract extension.
Yeah, I guess would be. $4.5 million per year for Yaroslav Halak. Any thoughts on this one?
Well, I mean, they needed a goalie in the worst way possible.
Sure.
And... a four-year deal at 4.5, maybe a little bit hefty, a tad hefty for a guy like Yaroslav Halak, who I think has played in an insulated market and insulated team in terms of the Blues. The Blues are able to keep shots to the outside, play very strong defensively, so I think his stats are a tad inflated. Having said that, he's played in Montreal before, has succeeded, albeit in a time-sharing role with Carey Price, and succeeding, of course, in the playoffs, 2008 playoffs, I believe, or 9 playoffs, I believe it was. 9 or 10, whatever it was. He is an NHL netminder, and I think he's an NHL number one netminder. I think he's probably at the bottom tier of that group, but he is in that group nonetheless. I think Evgeny Nabokov isn't anywhere near that group anymore. He's older now, he's not as quick, and he's small. And I think with Halak, you get a guy you know is going to be able to play between the pipes. You get a team you know needs a goaltender. And I think jumping on the market, beating the market to Halak, giving up a draft pick, because you're able to sign him, I like this move by Garth Snow. This is a move that had to have been done, ought to have been done last year. I mean, we said it before the season, they need better goaltending, and throughout the season they needed better goaltending, so why the heck they ever traded picks and value for Thomas Vanek when they needed defense or goaltending was beyond me. But now they've addressed this. Is he Carey Price? No. But I think he's a solid netminder, and he's certainly an upgrade over what they had, so it's a good move.
Yeah, I agree, Richie, and apparently Nabokov might still be retained by Garth Snow to be the backup, but
he's a UFA.
He is a UFA, so he might get a 1-year deal and stick around. But last year with Nabokov and Kevin Poulin,
Anders Nielsen,
and they had Nielsen there, and those goalies are AHL goalies at this point in their careers. And Nabokov, his best years, as we know, as Richie mentioned, are behind him. So Halak, a guy that fell out of favor there and was obviously moved. But he'll give them what they need. They need a number one goaltender, and he's maybe not a top number one goaltender, but he's a legitimate number one goaltender. He's played that played that role in Montreal, and even though Carey Price was obviously ultimately deemed the better goaltender, rightly so, and then they traded him to St. Louis. But last year he still won 24 games with the Blues, and he won 5 games with the Capitals after being moved. So he's still a guy that 30 wins in the NHL is not bad. Sure, the Blues are a very good team, and he wasn't very good, and that's why they went out and they got Ryan Miller. But I think for them it's a good move, and the Islanders they have to. You talk about a team who had a disappointing year. That was nothing more could have gone wrong for that team, and they need to make other moves to address scoring issues, and Halak, now they know they have the goaltender issue addressed, and they again, guys, I think this is the timing of this is good too, because you have other guys that are going to be on the free agent market, a Jonas Hiller, a Ryan Miller, another guy, James Reimer, could be a guy that moves out of Toronto. So I think this is a good, you don't want to, they addressed this, identified who they liked, and they got the contract done.
And one thing to note, we also talked about this throughout the year, for all of, I think Garth Snow's done an excellent job, if not one of the best jobs in the NHL, at signing guys below market deals. And so when you have to pay a little bit more, not too much more, for Yaroslav Halak, you can do that because you've afforded yourself the opportunity. Tavares, 5.5 a year, way under market. Grabner at 3, probably a little under market. Okposo at 2.8 for the next 2 years, way under market. I mean, Franz Nielsen, 2.75 for the next 2 years, way under market. Hamonic for the next 6 years at 3.8, under market. So you can afford to pay a $500,000 premium on a guy to fill an important need.
And of course, he falls probably right in that, when he's average, he's probably in the 15 to 20 range, but when he's good, he's probably closer to the 10 to 12 range.
No, I think it's, I'm not so sure, Drew. I think when he's average, he's in the 23 to 30 range, and when he's good, he's in the 15 to 20 range.
Really? You think he's bottom third?
Yeah, he's bottom third. Yeah.
Okay.
You just got to, you go through the league and you're going to pick a lot better goaltenders than him, but he's an NHL starter, and they didn't have that last year.
You take him over Pavlik?
Yes, I would take him over Pavlik. But at the same time, we haven't seen Pavlik ever play in an environment like St. Louis, but yes, I would take him over Pavlik.
And we should mention, a couple of years ago, he was the number one goalie in St. Louis, and then last year, Brian Elliott got the majority, 2 years ago, Brian Elliott got the majority of the starts, and then last year, Elliott also struggled, And, you know, I think we're going to touch on that, too, right now.
It's a very good segue
there. What they've done is they've identified Jake Allen as the future goalie of that team, and that's why they didn't bring Halak back.
Brian Elliott re-signs in St. Louis, 3 years, $2.5 million per season.
Yep.
So it's a three-year, $7.5 million season to be the veteran backup. You know, he'll probably play 25 games, I figure, 30 games for the Blues next year.
It's a lot of money to pay a guy to play 25 games over the next few years. I mean, each year. I think that's a lot of money. I don't think Brian Elliott's the number one netminder. I don't think Brian Elliott's going to take you anywhere to the promised land, and I respect him. He's made a nice career for himself, and I think he's certainly a backup, but that's a pretty hefty price for a backup, no?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, you know, if Jake Allen becomes your number one goaltender, and I think they're expecting Jake Allen to be their number
one
goaltender.
Well, there's people that will tell you he's the best goaltender not in the NHL, although right. I think John Gibson, Gibson was called, I think Gibson would probably have that title, would hold that title. But Allen, they say, is one of the top three guys not in the NHL, and they obviously think he's going to be the guy moving forward
I think you'll see that happen next year. He's not a 19 or 20-year-old goaltender. He's played 4 years in Peoria in the AHL. And I think with Brian Elliott and the contract he was given, I think Richie's trying to say is it's a lot of money to pay a backup.
Yeah, well,
and I think when you're talking about if Elliott is struggling, and we know that the Blues are one of the best defensive teams in the league, coached by Ken Hitchcock, and they've brought Kirk Muller in there, I think you're going to see Jake Allen take the number one job next year.
Well, I think so, too. But I think one thing to note, Drew, I assume you're going to go down the avenue of he's making $800,000 next year as
Allen.
Right. So combined, you're paying your goalies $3.3. Fair enough. But Allen's an RFA after this year, and if he does have a great performance, they have to pay him. Then they're paying a lot to their goaltenders. That's all I'm saying. It's
then you'll be doing the Johnny Manziel, Richie.
That's right.
Yeah, you were doing that when you were trying to get the chicken wing sauce off your hands earlier.
Yeah, that's actually what I was doing. I wasn't trying to do the Johnny Manziel. I was actually calling the server for a wet nap.
Yeah, okay. It's the universal wet nap signal is what that is. Tell you what, let's go to break. When we come back, a little more on goaltending, some other news and notes from around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290. Online at TSN1290.ca. Reminder, following us this afternoon, Toronto Blue Jays baseball here on the station. Jays continue their series against the Oakland Athletics.
In the AL East, baby.
First in the AL East. Look to make it. They won five in a row. They're looking to make it six in a row. I think that's how it is. They won last night against the A's. They swept the Red Sox earlier this week, and I believe they won the last game in the series prior to that. Was that in Cleveland last weekend? I'm trying to remember.
Cleveland. I think so.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. Not 100%.
How's Ricky Henderson doing this year?
He's still stealing bases left, right, and center. Anyways, the Jays and the Oakland Athletics following us here on TSN 1290. R.A. Dickey going for the Jays. Yeah, that's it. That's all I have on that one.
Any got a nice little
notes?
Knuckler.
Dear God.
NHL news and notes.
As we were talking about before with all the goaltending moves from around the NHL, Brian Elliott resigns in St. Louis. Jake Allen going to take over the number one spot there, hopefully. Where does this leave Ryan Miller?
Well, it's a really good question.
Yeah, you know, San Jose apparently isn't interested. I mean, he wants to go to California. There's only one problem.
California doesn't want him.
Yeah, it doesn't appear that they do. I mean, maybe Anaheim, but I don't know. Anderson and Gibson, do you really want him to be that guy?
No.
Is he still that good? I mean, I agreed. I questioned that during the year. I didn't think that move made a ton of sense. I didn't think it addressed the main issue in St. Louis. PJ Stock mentioned, you know, is he that good? And so where are you going to go? And you look at Phoenix. Well, he's not going to go to Phoenix. If he wants to play somewhere west, if you look at Dallas, well, Kari Lehtinen is better than Ryan Miller, in my opinion. You know, does he want to go to Vancouver? What's their situation? They're going to might have a goaltending need, but, you know. And then you're talking Western Canada. Apparently didn't really want to play in Canada anyways. So this guy is better decide. It might be who wants him, not where he wants to go, because there's not that many teams with goaltending needs, guys.
I think you look at, for me, Minnesota Wild, and there's the issue of Josh Harding's health. And to me, Minnesota Wild are a team. We saw them have to rely on Ilya Bryzgalov in place of Darcy Kemper, who was in place of Josh Harding. So Minnesota, to me, is a possibility. look at an Edmonton Oilers. Do they want to give him that type of money? Ryan Miller's going to want $6 million. And I think Richie raises a good question that I think was evident in the playoffs. Is Ryan Miller is he even a top 10 goalie in the NHL anymore? And if he isn't a top 10 goalie, if he's kind of just an average number one goalie now, can he command $6 million a year? And I think Ryan Miller's an excellent goalie, and we saw him almost win the gold medal for Team USA at the Olympics, and he's been very good.
That was 4 years ago.
Exactly, and I think now he's a little bit older, and guys, there's goalies that are coming in every year now. We've seen the wave of new goalies coming in. I mean, Dustin Tokarski's one of them. I mean, he's not maybe in the same league as a John Gibson or a Jake Allen, but, I mean, there's goalies that are better than him now. And obviously, St. Louis thinks Jake Allen is better goalie than Ryan Miller, and they're also going to pay him $5 million less.
The thing is, there's these ton of teams that have needs in goal are in Canada.
And that's where he supposedly doesn't necessarily want to go.
Vancouver, you could say Calgary, Winnipeg, Edmonton. You could all say there's needs.
I think Vancouver will go with Lack and Markstrom, though.
I agree.
It's not as good as Luongo and Schneider, but you look at Calgary. Is Calgary a team that's rebuilding? And again, I don't think Miller, no offense to Calgary, love Calgary. I just don't think he wants to go there.
Huh. So why would he go to Calgary? Calgary and Buffalo. If you're going to go to Calgary, why would you leave Buffalo to begin with?
Well,
he's got his shot at St. Louis.
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
it's more to do in Calgary than Buffalo, Drew.
Yeah, fine, but I mean, you've already made a life for yourself in Buffalo, is what I'm saying.
Well, Calgary's closer to the West Coast, too, which apparently is an issue for his wife or girlfriend, whatever. I'm not sure what she is, but you took... What about this? I mean, one thing to look at is, what about what happens in Pittsburgh? Is Fleury somebody they want to move out, and then would he make an exception? I assume he would, an exception, quote-unquote, to play with the likes of Sidney Crosby. I mean, these are things that might happen, and we don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of movement at the draft, and we're hearing there's going to be a ton of trades, and
fingers crossed we'll be there.
Yeah, we hope so. But there aren't many teams that need a goaltender, so it's hard. I think it's one of the teams that he goes to is a team that actually has a goaltender right now who we think may be the starter next year.
That'll be an interesting point right there. Moving around to Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Lightning have re-signed Tyler Johnson to a 3-year, $10 million contract extension. Your thoughts on that move for the Lightning?
I really like Tyler Johnson, and he at certain points in the season he was playing on the top line, and he's a Rookie of the Year candidate, and scored 24 goals and played in all 82 games. And he's a small guy, obviously, that took a while to develop. You don't see 23-year-old Rookie of the Year candidates very often. I think 25 is the max age in order to be a Rookie of the Year candidate. But he's a guy that, was very successful in the AHL, was a point-of-game player in the AHL for the Syracuse Crunch, played under John Cooper.
MVP in the AHL as well.
He was an MVP in the AHL, played under John Cooper, and then when John Cooper became coach, he succeeded along with guys like Andre Palat and Mark Barberio and all these guys that kind of came up through the AHL with John Cooper. And, he's a good player, so it's a nice contract for him. He earned it, and, he did it not the traditional way, at having to take a little bit longer. And, it's good for him. He wasn't drafted.
That's right.
He's a guy that was unsigned, similar to a Marty St. Louis, who was not drafted. David Clarkson's another guy. It's nice to see. I always like to see these guys that are kind of, they're not highly rated draft picks, and they kind of take a while. Like a David Desharnais is another example of a guy that didn't really establish himself as an NHLer until he was like 22, 23. So it's good for Tyler Johnson. He's a speedy guy, and he's a part of that young core there of Tampa.
This is what teams like LA and different teams are doing, and Detroit does this well with the second contract. You guys talked about the not being drafted factor, but this is a guy who ended up playing, 14 games last year, played 82 games this year. I think he's a nice player. He's good with the puck, really good skater, smaller guy, but
24 goals, 26 assists, 50 points.
But the point is that you're not bringing him up, and you mentioned the AHL years, and I think those are important to note. And you look at how he performed in Norfolk, and he had 68 points in 75 games, and then 65 points in 62 games for Syracuse. But when a second contract comes up with this guy, he's had a nice year, 50 points, you mentioned, in 82 games last season, but not enough to say, okay, let's pay him on an 8-year deal. So what you're doing is, it's like Toffoli and those guys, they get to their second contracts, and you can sign them to reasonable 3-year, $10 million deals, paying them $3.33 per year, and you will get value out of that. So this is a different, you see two different perspectives in the National Hockey League. Play him young, sign him to a long-term second deal. This one is, put him through the system, sign him to a more reasonable second deal, then maybe sign him to a longer third deal and buy more UFA years, maybe pay more, but you get more value at the front end.
Some more
and you get more, you get an assurance that you know the player you get in 3 years from now, as opposed to a 6 year or 7 year deal now and taking a risk that he's going to be that player for 7 years.
Sure. Some more bad news comes out of Pittsburgh, as pretty much everybody on that team decided to undergo surgery when their season ended. Penguins rookie defenseman Olli Maatta, he has a shoulder surgery. He's out 4 to 6 months. Bo Bennett, he has surgery on his shoulder as well. He's out 4 months. And Derek Pouliot also undergoes shoulder surgery, labral repair surgery. He's out 4 months.
Do they play any games in August?
No, but I mean, 4 to 6 months is, I mean, you know, it's more than just, you know, it's, you know, this is May, so June, July, August, September, they're all out. You know, Maatta could be out another 2 months after that. And, you know, for whatever reason, I think shoulders and things of that nature, you know, we saw how bad the shoulder surgery hurt Eric Fehr in his career here in Winnipeg. He was never the same after that. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, panic time, but I think it is something to be slightly concerned about for the Penguins.
Yeah, it's something to be concerned about, and it's unfortunate, and you hope that these guys are ready to go when the season starts, especially training camp, you know, but hopefully they're not missing, you know, 10 games of the season, and it looks like Maatta's is a little bit more serious, and it's unfortunate because he had an amazing rookie year, and we were talking about that a few segments ago, I guess in the first hour, when we were talking about Josh Morrissey, and Maatta is a guy, a 19-year-old coming out of the OHL, who really surprised Bylsma and the coaching staff and made the team. They basically couldn't send him back because of the way he played. That's so it's unfortunate because he had a great rookie year, and you know he was arguably, you know, a kind of a peripheral Calder Trophy candidate, really, with the way he played. Him and Trouba were excellent young the two best rookie defensemen in the NHL, and you know I guess Torrey Krug wasn't bad either. But like it's unfortunate because these are two guys that are part of the future of this team. And Bo Bennett, you could see that he wasn't himself in the playoffs. He only had one goal in 12 games, and he was on the top line with Crosby and Kunitz, and he didn't really spark any offense there with Crosby and Kunitz. So it's unfortunate, and hopefully they heal. And as you mentioned, Drew, hopefully it doesn't have long-term effects because, yeah, sure, you can have shoulder surgery and you're never the same, and you hope that isn't the case here.
Last news and note from around the league, the New York Islanders, to finish off their trade, their disastrous trade with the Buffalo Sabres, announced that they will hold on to their 2014 first-round selection, and instead they will send their 2015 first-round pick to the Buffalo Sabres. That's all part of the Thomas Vanek deal earlier this year. You know, are you surprised that the Islanders decided to hold on to their 2014 pick? Obviously, they hope to be better this coming season than they were this year, which was an unmitigated disaster.
Exactly. So they're thinking that they're probably going to be a playoff team. I think the Islanders are good enough to be a playoff team, and next year they give up a lower pick. And I think, you know, as far as the pick here, they have the fifth overall pick, and Garth Snow is publicly saying he'll trade it. We've seen Dale Tallon and the Florida Panthers say he's going to trade the pick. They've got the first overall pick. And I think I like to see that, Richie, because what we see here is this isn't a good draft. This is not a strong draft, and we're going to have Craig Button on in the coming weeks to talk about that when we start previewing the draft. But what we're seeing is, because this isn't a strong draft, and they're not sure, you know, is it Aaron Ekblad, is it Bennett, is it Reinhardt, teams are willing to shop these picks, so it's good to see. It's great for fans when you have these, absolutely, you know, possible picks moving hands.
Let's go to break. We just got word Jim Fox, LA Kings color commentator, is going to join us. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jim Fox to wrap up the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN 1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and for it, we go out live to Los Angeles, where we'll be joined by Jim Fox.
Now, let's go live on The Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the color analyst for the LA Kings, Jim Fox. Jim, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Jim, obviously, you know, the game two that just occurred earlier this week between the Blackhawks and the Kings was sort of a tale of two games. Blackhawks played well, controlled most of the game right up until the minute and a half to go in the second period. And then the final 21 and a half minutes of that game was just utter domination from the Los Angeles Kings. You know, how surprised were you to see the Kings, you know, really pepper and take the game to the Blackhawks in a manner that we haven't really seen much in the last couple of years?
Well, because it happened the way you explained, it was a little bit surprising because the Hawks certainly did have control of the game. And it was just one of those things where once the Kings got back into it, then the power play took over. And perhaps, maybe, certainly a little bit uncharacteristic, the Hawks were, once they got behind, were trying to get everything back in one shift. And they started to take a lot of chances. And that's when the Kings actually played their most disciplined hockey. They just started to support the puck, and when they supported the puck, Chicago started running out of position, and then all of a sudden you had 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s, and the chances kept going and going, and the Kings finished. So, yeah, it was two separate games, and for the Kings, they're happy they got the latter half of the game, because that's the one that stood up, and again, the Hawks kind of lost it a little bit, and the Kings certainly took advantage of it.
Yeah, Jim, you've seen Anze Kopitar play since he came into the NHL. Have you ever seen him play better than he's played in these playoffs?
Well, I think taking into consideration the competition and some of the matchups he's had to go through. You know, the first series, it was basically Joe Thornton. The second series, it was Ryan Getzlaf. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's Jonathan Toews. So now you're looking at a very difficult task. And I don't think there's any question now that everyone is starting to realize that Andre Kopitar is at the top of the league. We're talking right at the top. Mm-hmm. He's right there. There's a group of five or six players that you would consider as the top centerman, top, you know, two-way players, and Andre's right there with them. So, he's deserved it. He's had to work for it, and now everyone else is seeing it.
Jim, I got to ask you about Tyler Toffoli. I've been talking about Richie about Tyler Toffoli all year, and we've seen him for the second year in a row have a great playoffs, and he's doing an excellent job playing with Jeff Carter and Tanner Pearson. How big of a steal do they have with Tyler Toffoli here?
Well, they've got someone that has that instant strike capability. He has, you know, excellent release. He does have the thing that maybe it's difficult to teach, the just knowing where to go. He's not a, could be considered a great skater, but he finds a way to get to the spot. And once he gets there, that puck is off the stick before you know it. So he is a world-class sniper. I think that he does have the potential to score 30 goals at the NHL level, and 30 goals nowadays puts you right up there. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's still young to the game. And one thing I respect with Tyler more than most things is he's not forcing things, he's not taking chances, he's not being selfish. He's playing within a very structured defensive system, so he's not going outside that system, and you know, when he gets the chances, he's finishing it off. So, you know, there's a lot of times young players want to prove themselves, and they, you know, at times they start taking chances offensively. Tyler has not done that. He's playing within the system, and he's still being effective.
Jim, we were talking about this earlier in the show. You know, the Toffoli-Pearson-Carter line was excellent in Game 2. Do you think the Hawks are going to change their defensive pairings to deal with that line, or do you think it's going to be the same as the first two games?
Well, I think, you know, the Kings got have some balance now that they didn't have before, so it certainly puts a little pressure on the Hawks to make those types of decisions. I think the way I look at it, I would consider that line as the second offensive line. But, of course, you have some veterans on another couple of lines that are they're playing pretty well right now. But it is a nice mix. It's a little bit of a speed issue that the Kings did not have before. And that is the biggest difference, I believe, going into this series this year versus the Hawks compared to last year. And it is that line, that ability to bring a little bit of pace, not necessarily dictated, but certainly keep up with it. And we saw, again, what happened the last game. Once it opened up a little bit, the Kings were able to dictate that pace, and that's very important, and they certainly did that. And those three guys are very, very important to that.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Jim Fox, the Los Angeles Kings color analyst, discussing the Blackhawks-Kings series. Game 3 goes tonight in Los Angeles.
Jim, I find this series so fascinating because you have, you know, two championship teams and coaches who obviously have coached those teams and have won before. What do you find is the biggest difference between Daryl Sutter's style and Joel Quenneville's style?
That's a good question. I think certainly behind the bench, I think, you know, Joel gets very animated and you can see the intensity. I think Daryl certainly is a lot calmer behind the bench, but you know that the intensity is still there. They just, both guys show it a little bit differently. I think that, you know, personnel and determines a little bit of how they coach as far as the systems and things of that sort. I don't think there's much question that when you're looking at the Blackhawks, you're looking at five or six, maybe seven guys who are deadly. So you've got to really take that into consideration. But I think, you know, that like most teams, the personality of the coach does filter down to the playoff players. And when you have Quenneville and the up-tempo, and that's where you like to play it, and with Darryl's teams, it's more conservative to start with, and it's kind of one of those types of styles that, you know, you're there at the end of the game. You just kind of hang on. You're there at the end of the game, and so many times it's more consistent that way. So it is probably a contrast. I think there's a pretty – it's very visible to see that contrast when you have two guys, you know, maybe a pressure situation or a call on the ice, and – you know, Darryl doesn't necessarily like it, but he doesn't go off the handle. I think with Joel at times, he lets that get a little bit better of him, but that's what he wants. He wants to create some intensity for his team. I think with Darryl, he tries to create a calmness.
Jim, you look at the Kings roster, and throughout the regular season, the knock on them, if there was a, you know, was a knock, it was that maybe their foot speed isn't what it needs to be. Maybe they're not a fast enough team. Then they go out and they get Marian Gaborik at the trade deadline. How important to the Kings' success has been the addition of Marian Gaborik and the speed that he brings to the team as a result?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, was the ingredient that the Kings needed. I don't think there's any question there, and that's, of course, why Dean Lombardi went out and made it. Dean did a lot of homework, too, on Gaborik and his understanding of the entire game and, you know, being able to fit into a team. And then also having that team being able to take in a player like Gaborik. But that dimension was something the Kings were a little bit behind the eight ball on. And once they got it, then all of a sudden it just seems weird because then you start noticing the speed of Pearson more. Mm-hmm. And again, Carter goes to center and he's flying. So then all of a sudden the Kings are no longer a slow-footed team and they seem to have a little bit of pace and speed. And even in game one of this series, actually, you know, the Kings played pretty well. I thought they played very well. I was very impressed with the Kings being able to not only keep up in game one, but even though they lost 3-1, I thought they dictated the pace at times, which I don't think they could have done at any time last year.
Right.
Well, you have it with Gaborik. He adds that, and then all of a sudden, other guys are quicker too.
Jim, Mike Richards has played on the fourth line for most of the playoffs. Can the Kings win this series, eventually maybe even win the Stanley Cup, with Mike Richards playing that role, or do you think he has to be playing more of a primary scoring role?
I don't think he's going to get to the primary scoring role, but I think that, and you, I understand where you're coming from, but by the end of the game, usually his ice time is not fourth line ice time. Mm-hmm. It is right there with the second centerman's ice time. So because he plays in penalty kill situations, he plays in power play situations, he does get the amount of ice time which would move him up. I think in the past, Mike has been more consistent offensively, but I think, watching the whole year, I don't expect that anymore. But I still now expect that the Kings have understood that. They've adjusted. They've made the necessary moves that they have to do. And so they are going to expect less offense from Richards and at the same time get an effective team going in the way they approach the game. So if it comes now, it's going to be more of a bonus than anything. But I think certainly the Kings can still be effective and still be good enough to win in the current roles that Mike's playing.
Final question for you, Jim, and you're in the arena, you get a good view of this. Strategy-wise, the Hawks love to kind of spread out the ice and even throw sometimes three guys up into the neutral zone when they're doing their breakouts. And the Kings have been a team, and from what I've seen, that don't really like to get outnumbered. They always have a forward, at least their third forward's always high, if not, you know, four forwards. How is this strategically? How have the Kings been able to deal with the Hawks' speed and kind of that spread offense that they like to utilize?
Well, it's a matter of being, as they say, on the right side of the puck. So that doesn't mean the right-left. It means correct side, and you've got to be on the defensive side, and the Kings pride themselves in that. I think one thing that the Hawks, you know, they have over most teams, they're looking to get the one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not necessarily looking to outnumber you. They're looking to just isolate and get a one-on-one and let their skill take over. But that's where the Kings have a little bit more of a sense in that tight five-man unit issue where they've been schooled so well as a group, and it's part of their system that that five-man unit becomes a factor. So even though you get the one-on-one for a split second, after that, there's support on the play, and the Kings get back. So, you know, it's we're talking about the coaches. It is a contrast in style here because, mm-hmm. again, the Hawks are known for offense, and they should be known for offense because of the aggressive skill that they have. The Kings are known for defense, and it's because of the way they approach the game. It's the attitude they bring to the game. As a five-man unit, that's very important, where everyone is working not necessarily for themselves, they're working for each other, and it's been very effective.
Jim Fox is the Los Angeles Kings color analyst on Fox Sports West. He joins us today from Los Angeles, where Game 3 between the Blackhawks and the Kings gets underway later on this evening. Jim, thanks very much for doing this.
Okay, guys. My pleasure. Thanks.
Take care, Jim. Thanks very much. Before we wrap up for the week, boys, your predictions. What happens this weekend in the two games? Tonight in Los Angeles, tomorrow in New York.
I think the Kings take tonight, Drew. I think they're going to ride that. I know Ezzy doesn't think momentum carries from game to game. I think at some levels it does, but I agree, Ezzy, for the most part, it probably doesn't. But I think that finish gives them confidence and going home for the first game. I think Kings win. I think the Canadians have not played well. I think the Canadians play their best game into the series on Sunday, although my predictions haven't been good this playoffs. And I think it's Kings and Habs on this weekend.
Yeah, I'll quickly go. I'll go Hawks and Canadians, and I think those two teams are still going to win the series.
Hawks and the Canadians. Ooh. Okay, you're having you think the Habs are going to pull off the comeback. That'll be quite the bold prediction. Anyways, that's it for today in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram, Sean Fitzgerald from the National Post, and Jim Fox from Fox Sports West, LA Kings TV analyst. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, CompuStitch Embroidery Design, and our friends at Bernstein's Deli. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.